Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for listening to Best Ever You. I'm Elizabeth, and I have Sherry Salata on the line with us. And Sherry, hello, hello. I'm just going to bring you in right off the bat.
Elizabeth, you and I are... We're united. We've come together after all this time.
The power of Twitter and Iowa, the great state of Iowa. Thank you, Hawkeyes. So funny.
Yes, and, go Hawks.
And hair, because I think, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit the last to know because I didn't research you fully before I sent you the very first tweet. There was no agenda. There was no nothing. I just like, oh my God, I love your hair and your eyes and your smile. And I was just sort of like watching all that you do. And I didn't really even, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't even bother to do all the homework. And it turns out, oh my gosh, this book is so cool. Everybody listening, please go to beautifulknow.com and follow along and share this show and buy her book. It is so cool. It's called The Beautiful Know, and there's a tagline to it too, and other tales of trial, transcendence, and transformation. And I am just, I live in gratitude because I, you know, I'm a human being that's, you know, lost their life nearly a couple times through food allergic reactions. So this is a huge deal, you know, just a huge deal to have you on the show. I'm just so, I feel so blessed in this moment. My hair is like standing on end.
Well, you know, speaking of hair, I know you love on social media. When I post my Velcro rollers, I call them the Velcro Chronicles, and you love that. But really the truth is I just am a terrible blow dryer. So what I do is I take that big, fat curling iron, and I get my hair a little bent and hot, and then I throw in the Velcro rollers, and that has saved me for years.
I love it. Yeah, there are secrets here, people. You got to really go to her Instagram, Sherry Salata. I'm going to spell the last name, S-A-L-A-T-A. She has beauty secrets and all sorts of really just wisdom and cool things. Oh, my gosh, you're absolutely gorgeous. And, but you know, gorgeous is one thing, but gorgeous inside is another, and you're that too. And I think that's what I love most about you, bravery. I mean, I got to look at my I wrote all these questions out. I'm like, I've got to ask her this and that and another thing, but really, can you start us out like in that moment of, I got to change something? Because we love change on Best Ever You.
Oh, yes. You are a great teacher of that. I think for me, I have an absolute mastery level ability to go unconscious in certain areas of my life. And I would say, you know, once I hit, but at 35, I got the entry level job at the Oprah Winfrey Show. And all of a sudden, I was off to the races. And for almost 21 years, career of my dreams, really just heart-opening, soul-expanding, dream-making as a job description. And, you know, I often felt like, oh, my God, I'm getting paid to build a spiritual life, which was amazing. And, you know, the experiences, the people I saw. I mean, I knew it was a once in 10 lifetimes dream ride, and it sure was. But I can also take something that busy and that hectic and that all-consuming and use that as an excuse not to pay attention to the rest of my life, to health and wellness, to romance, you know, to all my relationships, to, you know, to really not putting myself in the front row seat and not taking care of myself. And that was the big paradox, Elizabeth. is that I had all the information, didn't need one more bit of information, and until I stepped out and decided to create my own business with one of my best friends of 30 years and to dream a new dream, was I able to see that, oh my gosh, you have let so many areas of your life go unlived.
Did people think you lost your marbles for a moment? Like, what are you doing?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Okay, good.
No, because I think that people that knew me and know me well were probably very, very relieved for me in a number of ways, because it had been all-consuming and it had been quite a bit. And the idea that I was going to move into a time of life where everything else would come first, and that I would reimagine and revision this time was, I think, exciting for people who I'm in real relationships with.
Do you you don't regret it? I don't think, right? You have no.
Oh my gosh, no. I mean, listen. I feel like so. Here's the thing, and I think it's something I share with a lot of women. For me, it was career. For a lot of women, it's raising children or taking care of their families. But it's very easy in for those of us of this generational time, 40s, 50s, 60s, and older, to really devote ourselves in service to something outside of ourselves. So the opportunity, and we all share that to some degree, the opportunity to realize, to really realize that being somebody else's something, whether it's you're somebody else's mother, partner, daughter, or employee, even if it is working for one of the most beloved people on the planet, you're an employee, you're somebody else's something, that does not a full life make. And I think what's exciting is the women that I'm talking to and meeting across America in this middle of lifetime, I think there's a lot of us who are saying, what's next? Maybe everything I've created so far is foundational, and I've learned so much from it. I appreciate it all. It's all so great. But maybe my most glorious days are yet to come, and what am I doing to make that so? That's the difference now.
And do you – you know, I think that we sometimes, this is my opinion, and you can share it or disagree or whatever, because that makes for some good radio conversations. But I like to please people just as much as the next. When you were in various roles that you've been in your life, did you always want to just like please everybody? Like I would think like in a role like that, you're like, okay, I'm going to read your book, buy your book, support your concepts and all that stuff. And I would think that it would almost be like information overload at some point, like you don't know, and conflicting too, maybe even. Is that accurate or
yeah.
Is that way off?
I think that's a really great observation, Elizabeth. And how it showed up for me is, you know, yes. I mean, we are raised by a couple generations of women, by the women who raise us and the women who raise them. And I think people pleasing and caring very much about what other people think of us are very, very much a part of that generationally. And what's really great about you start hitting your 40s and 50s, you're starting to see, wait a minute, I don't care what anybody else thinks. And all
yeah.
of a sudden that need to please people becomes less important, and instead what replaces it is I want to do what I want to do. I want to please myself. And if we can really take a moment and really allow that yearning to please ourselves, that yearning to really take care of ourselves, that desire to put ourselves first for once, I think that's the beginning of a very interesting life for all of us.
And with balance, so sometimes when I get people's books, I turn to a page. I just randomly turn to a page. And for you, It was page 157. And sure enough, I love this. It says, first of all, I didn't set out to achieve balance. I set out to make some big dreams come true. And it goes on and on about balance and not being in balance or being in balance and career and, you know, all these things. I'm almost 50 and I'm a mom of four boys. They're 17, 19, 21, and 23. And heck, if I can find balance in all of that, throw a career right on top of that, and it's like a recipe for madness. I mean, I don't know how people do everything that they do. Do you?
Well, listen, I mean, yes, I love that chapter so much. It's called My Epic Fail at Work-Life Balance. And what I realized was, and it was, oh, my God, I'd always used to be so ashamed that when you run things, companies, as you know, or shows or anything, the things that I got to do, I'd get asked to go speak in front of audiences, and inevitably someone would ask me, how do I achieve work-life balance? And I'd be like, I'd want to creep away in shame.
yeah.
And finally one day I realized that, wait a second, I don't even believe in it. I don't believe in work-life balance. I don't believe it's possible. I'm not setting out to even go for that. What I want to live is the life of my dreams, and what's the life of my dreams is the different than yours, different than somebody listening, and my real job is to figure out what that is. And, you know, in when we're telling the story of our lives and when we're really figuring out what means something to us, words matter. And so what I realized is, yep, that doesn't work for me. I'm going to stop using that phrase. I'm going to stop judging myself by that. And instead, what I really want to do is live my life with kind of letting my intuition and my gut flow my attention and guide me. And it's kind of like summoning the divine feminine within ourselves to kind of get us on our way. Like some days, some weeks work really needs to take, you know, a lot of time. And some days we're going to be more focused in different areas of our relationships, but trying to get that equaled and parceled out like a mathematical equation is just a recipe for failure, I think.
Yeah, I do not preach work-life balance. I preach moment, you know, like on different days, different things are priorities, and
yeah,
not every day is the same by any stretch.
Yes.
Especially when, you know, you have four little kids and they're each 2 years apart. For example, in my case, you know, it's like, okay, soccer and baseball and, you know, you're running around, and there wasn't I wasn't a person who could like drop my kids off I didn't feel comfortable dropping my kids off in daycare and going to work for whatever it would be. And I didn't think I could do both well, because if I'm going to achieve, I'm going to achieve. So one's going to take priority over the other. It was a really interesting conversation I had in my head about it. And so that's kind of why I did Best Ever You. I'm like, you know, I can kind of pick and choose what I want to do. It's sort of from home. But I have taken calls from my walk-in closet.
That's right. That's right. I love it. That's really great.
There's moments where, like, I'm out in the pool. Sorry. How'd you learn to trust your own gut like that? You know, was there a moment you had? Did you, I wanted to ask this too. Was there any kind of feeling like you were sick or anything like that? Did you, like, for me, I know when I've had too much sugar, you know, I just am touchy like that. Did you get sick, or did you get tired, or did you just?
No, I wouldn't say that. And I would say, how did I learn to trust my gut? I'm still doing that. I'm a make it happen, push the boulder uphill kind of producer person. So I still have to be very, very intently focused on what's going on in my energy. You know, so for a perfect example is, as you know, you have a book coming out. There's everybody and their brother has ideas about what you should do to be supporting that book. Of course, you want the book to do well. All of a sudden, one day, I was like, what is that feeling I'm having? I'm like, I feel tension. It feels a little like stress. I feel my, like, my adrenaline rising in my body, and I'm like, oh, that's the old you. That's the old you. The make it happen, make it happen. Summon the troops, make it happen. And that really isn't how I want to live anymore. I'm really experimenting with kind of those more divine magical qualities, manifesting, magnetizing, like really quieting my mind. So my most inner knowing can rise up and tell me what my next steps are. So I have to stay very vigilant because those patterns are deeply ingrained, deeply ingrained. Yeah. And so the changes we make, and the little changes, the bigger changes, the changes in energy, the changes in the story we're telling ourselves really require attention, just paying attention to how we're speaking to ourselves and what kind of story we're spinning about what's really going on.
Oh, I can be so vicious to myself. It's scary. Give me a mirror and I can talk all day about how awful I am. And it's a bad pattern, isn't it? Oh, my goodness.
It really is. And that's one of the things that I think we have to pay the most attention to. You know, when I began this reckoning process, well, here's what I knew. If you unleash that harsh, critical, judgmental, very not loving at all voice that's been playing in your head for most of your life on yourself, you will never survive the process of taking an honest look at what you've created and then pivoting toward the life that you really want to live. And so instead, what is the voice that could help me? What is the voice that could coach me? And I realized it's the same voice that I would speak to a baby in the grocery store. It's the same voice that I speak to my English bulldogs, Bella and Kissy, with, who I love unconditionally. My voice immediately fills with love and tenderness and compassion. And I think for all of us, that's the biggest change we could make right now, is really decide that other voice, we're going to thank it for whatever service it provided and send it packing. And bring in a new voice, and that's the tender, compassionate, you are my dearest friend, nobody loves you more than me voice.
Is that the swimsuit voice that goes, you know, you can go out in the backyard in your own swimsuit, give yourself a break, ease up,
oh
no one's
God.
Even going to
yes.
see you.
It is the swimsuit voice, and believe me, that is when my old voice most wants to come back.
I need swim jeans. Like
I know.
Here.
It's the swimming suit shame for sure.
It's like, oh no. All right. So, all right. I hope everybody listens to that and plays that back a few times because that's powerful. It's the biggest change you can make is to ease up on yourself. Is that where we incorporate a little self-love and self-worth?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's the thing that feels for many of us like a difficult mountain to climb, that place of love for self. And, you know, I've been really ruminating on that lately. I saw a post that said love yourself most. And mm-hmm. I've really been fascinated with the idea of it and trying to like root it in my own psyche, that because for instance, let's imagine that we're able to discover what it means to love yourself most and make all of our decisions, little ones to the big ones, through that lens of loving ourselves most. All of a sudden, we've let everybody in our lives off the hook. No one needs to make us feel lovable because we love ourselves most. No one needs to make us feel worthy. Nothing external needs to come along to create that solid foundation that we are loved and treasured and cherished, because nobody else who walks the planet loves us more than we love ourselves. And I'm beginning to see that I think that might be the cure, the antidote, the path, the direction, the the foundation, the flowered carpet on the joy ride that we get to create for ourselves. So, I'm playing with that idea quite a bit because I think there's some good medicine in it.
The master of self-love and self-worth is a guy named Gary Kobat, and he came into my life probably 8 years ago or so now, and he helps with everything Best Ever You. And I was on a chocolate binge. I mean, a serious, like, head O in the chocolate chips gaining weight thing. And he's like, "Where's your self-love and self-worth?" And I'm like, "What?" I don't look in the mirror and say, "Oh, you're so awesome," you know, or anything like that. And he pivoted me right around. And he is masterful at self-love and self-worth.
Wow.
His name is Gary Kobat.
Amazing.
And yeah, he does a lot of coaching to athletes. And he's Will Ferrell and Jim Carrey's coach, and was Jim Carrey's coach for a long time. And he is just, he's just a beautiful human being. And he's recovering from heart valve surgery, actually, still. He had an accident. His heart valve blew out while he was bike riding, and Will Ferrell saved his life, called 911 the
wow.
whole bit. So yeah,
wow.
Great guy. If you don't know him, you should. It's Gary Kobat. He's more on Facebook than Twitter though. And,
okay.
He's my kind of person. He's my mentor and I love him dearly. And we do a lot of shows together and things like that, but he's masterful at self-love and self-worth. It's just brilliant. So, side note. Okay, let's go back.
I love
do
that.
Do you want to talk about the kindergarten version of you? Would we be best buddies in kindergarten and have known each other our whole lives?
Oh,
I kind
of
feel like we would have.
We would have. My mom dressed me like a little girly girl, you know, like in cute little dresses and stuff like that. But I think I was more of a mud pie kind of girl. Very, like, I loved to read. As I was learning how to read, that was like just opening up worlds to me. And because I was an only child for so many years, that I was so fascinated by friends, you know, and other little kids, and like loved my little cousins once they started coming along. So yeah, I was eager. I was open, I would say.
Did you organize people into like producing shows and things like that when you were
for
little?
Sure. Yeah, all those cousins, all those first cousins, every one of them has starred in a skit or a play or a musical spectacular of mine. And, you know, what's so funny is they would, you know, I would get in trouble all the time because someone would end up going to the parents who were off in the corner having their cocktails, complaining that I was making them practice too much because I was a bit of a drill sergeant then as well.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of 11 kids and we used to do magic shows. I'd organize everybody into magic shows. I have no idea what that's all about because I was terrible at it, but it was, you know, something to do and something fun. And there's a lot of kids, isn't it? 11 kids. Can you imagine that?
I can't even imagine that.
There's 8 girls and 3 boys.
Oh my gosh.
The fights for the phone were insane. There was like one phone between 40 of us. So the kindergarten version of you, did you read a lot? You said you read a lot. Could you read right off the bat in kindergarten? Was that different from other people? Cause I know I was different like that. I could read.
Yeah, I think, I was. And it was really, I think they skipped kindergarten. I don't think I went to kindergarten, obviously. I think I started right in first grade. And so I was always one of the younger ones in my class. But I ended up in those, I'm not sure this was a good idea, but I ended up in those independent reading programs where that you'd get a box of cards and you'd have to go, you know, the ones who could read the best were kind of isolated onto themselves.
Yeah.
But I'd have great teachers who would bring, like, you know, in third grade and fourth grade, they'd bring the Little House on the Prairie series for me or things like that. And, you know, my parents were, you know, the bookmobile and going to the library was big in my family. And I loved all of that. And I think reading really it opened up my life in such a beautiful way when I was young.
Do you think you, from that point, you always dreamed of writing a book or writing?
Yeah, well, I did dream. I mean, I dreamed in fourth grade I wanted to write the history of Poland. I thought that would be amazing because I'm a quarter Polish. I was always a writer of sorts, and I always liked to write, but I don't think, I mean, it didn't seem possible, honestly, Elizabeth. It did not seem possible. You know, like authors write books, you know, people who are famous and important write books. I don't think it was on the, you know, within my idea, the realm of possibility. I guess maybe when I started working at the Oprah Show, I thought, gosh, maybe someday I could be an author like these book club people. Maybe there'd be something that I could write about. But, you know, until it's happened, I mean, I still can scarcely believe it. That's the truth.
I think it's the coolest thing ever. I have that same kind of thinking, like, you know, I feel like I'm just me. and all those little connectors, you know, there's something about writing your story down and having people relate to you. I think through your book, you've made yourself vulnerable. And people, what do you think about that? Like, people seem to really connect with that right now. I was raised with don't ever show anybody a flaw or a booger. No. You know, everything's perfect and dandy. And it's like, no, that's not the way life is. Life is messy and, you know, and twist and turn and, you know, right?
Yeah, well, I would agree with you. I mean, I was raised the same way. It's like, you don't go hanging out your laundry all over in front of everybody. But I think what helped me so much is when Nancy and I started our podcast, The Sherry and Nancy Show, a couple years ago, because, you know, we're just having a conversation like you and I are having right now. It's not in front of anybody, live anyway, like that you can see. And so next thing you know, it's you know, you're revealing things you've never said before. You're talking about things that usually you would consider very private. And then the feedback would come from the listeners that helped me so much. You know, the fact that you would share that, now I feel better about it. You know, and certainly I had seen that with the Oprah Show when people would share their stories and their pains and their heartaches, that people around the world felt uplifted and bettered by that. So, I mean, when I was working on the book, there were times when I would kind of gloss over something and then I'd go back and think, nope, if you are going to put something out in the world, you know, with your name on it, you're going to have to go deeper. You're going to have to take your skin off a little bit.
Yeah, my mom said, oh no, what'd you write? What'd you write about us? I'm like, here you go. It's all right there. I think you're wonderful and make a mean pumpkin cake. So it's all good, Mom.
That's so sweet. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to go ripping on my parents at all. They're pretty cool. But so the one thing I noticed about you is just in meeting you a little bit that you don't have a what can you do for me part to you. There's no gene there that's, you know, activated that says, what can you do for me? It seems like you, to me anyway, the fact that you're on my show, it shows that you pay such close, kind attention to everybody at all levels. Am I right? Because I'm so grateful for you. And I love Nancy, by the way. Oh my gosh, I need to talk about that podcast because I love her too. I just want her on as a guest too.
Awesome.
I'm like, please, Nancy, come on the show.
I know. I don't have that what can you do for me thing. In fact, the fact that, you know, so many people that I've helped over the years or whose things I've launched, the fact that those people have like just risen up to support me with this book launch is, I mean, I marvel at it, to tell you the truth. I marvel at it. I just go, wow, I just can't even believe it. You know, and even people that I've met in the last couple years through, you know, various meetings and groups, I mean, just sending my book out to their lists and, you know, having me like you, having me on your show, I just marvel at that. I think that, you know, I just, you know, it's new territory for me, and I really, really, absolutely appreciate it. I will tell you that I am becoming a person who pays very close attention to other people, because I'm becoming a person who pays very close attention to myself. And that I think those two things go hand in hand.
Yeah, I'm so fascinated by other people. I think so many people have so many gifts and talents that it's almost overwhelming if you stop and think about it. It's just crazy cool how people are. It's wild. I mean, we have a son who plays college baseball, and it's gone from, oh my God, he looks so cute in his little T-ball uniform, to, oh my God, he's pitching in summer collegiate leagues. And you meet so many different people through that, and people come up and they're like, oh, I love the way he pitches, or I love, you know, and you're like, wow, somebody's like, you're paying attention to my child. You don't have to do that.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
I just think people are so cool. Yeah. So I agree with you. And I think, don't you love the power of social media? Like, how was that when you were doing TV and didn't have social media compared to how like it is now?
I mean, you know, sometimes there's a bit of a, you know, let me say what I think about social media. I think social media is amazing. I think never in our lives have we had the ability, like how you and I have connected. I mean, unless we ran smack dab into each other at a University of Iowa event, we might never know one another. And in that way, our lives have become so much more expansive, and the possibilities for connection and friendship just limitless in a way that it's never been before. And I think the only thing that maybe we need to pay attention to is going down the rabbit hole of the scroll, as I say, you know, scrolling mindlessly when actually maybe 5 minutes of deep breathing or a 15-minute meditation would serve us better. And so that's what I say to myself. Listen, I'm the same way. I get on Facebook, and next thing I know, I'm like, oh, my God, an hour's passed. What was I just doing with myself? And that's the thing. It's like it's like how I mindlessly used to watch television, and now I curate it so specifically where I only choose certain shows. My TV's not on all day long. I sit down to watch it when I've decided, oh, I'm going to go watch a scripted series that I have saved for myself. I'm not just barraged 24/7 with television anymore, because what I want to curate what comes into my experience.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's really important to stay so kind to other people on social media. I try to teach my children, people I encounter, to like, if you wouldn't say that to their face, definitely do not type that out on anything. Definitely don't send it.
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I think it would be really tough to be a grade school kid in the age of social media.
Oh.
You know, it was bad enough for kids to get, you know, bullied, you know, at school on the premises, and I just can't even imagine. It must be a real trial. You know, if you're a parent with a kid who's going through a phase like that, oh my gosh.
Bullied. Yeah, I said, yep, you can be on social media, and guess who your number one fan is? Mom.
so sweet.
And I'm like, yeah. And you can feel them try and get away from you as they get older, because, you know, like all the parents are on Facebook now. It's this huge joke among, you know, kids. Like all the parents are on Facebook and the kids are on Snapchat. And I had it's hilarious. But my kids know I don't. Well, I semi-stalk them on social media, but not anymore. I'm just kidding. But we were at a restaurant, and the kids were like, Mom, you need Snapchat. And I'm like, oh, I don't. Trust me. I don't need any more social media. And they're like, look what you can do, though. And they turned me into, like, this great troll on Snapchat. And I'm like, oh, I definitely need Snapchat. So now I'm on Snapchat.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
Oh yeah. Well, so I posted like this picture of you know, Snapchat, you can voice change and stuff like that. I'm like, this is why parents shouldn't be allowed access to Snapchat and all that stuff.
No,
so.
I don't know, because I don't have a child to teach me. So somebody once tried to teach me Snapchat, and I was like, I don't really get this. It's there and it's gone. I don't really understand.
It's just for goof around. I mean, it changes your face and it puts curlers in your hair and all this stuff. But what I think is super important about that is, sometimes if you're not on those formats, you lose a generation of people who want to read your book or look at your website and so forth as they grow up. So that's kind of some of the things I think about that. But I'm losing track of time and I keep wanting to talk to you. I got to look at time here. But while I'm doing that, can you talk? This is okay. So we talked about all the people out there and people we encounter and so forth. I kind of, in doing Best Ever You for a long time now, I see a lot of grief. I see a lot of people walking around in grief, hiding grief. And your book talks about loss in a couple of different spots. And I just recently lost my father in October, who was a huge topic of my own book. He's why I even wrote a book, because he was so darn inspirational as a stroke survivor. And my heart aches hearing about your loss. And I was just wondering if you could talk about that, but also talk about it in terms of hiding grief and the ways it shows up and all that.
Right. Well, I mean, I knew 9 years ago, my younger brother at 44 years old didn't wake up. He had a massive heart attack in his sleep, 4 little kids. It was, nobody saw it coming. It was such a shock. It was season 24, the second to the last season of the Oprah Winfrey Show. And I was the executive producer, and I knew that in this book I was going to have to write about it. And even though I was going to have to write about it, not having processed that grief, because I had basically gone into producer mode and then gone back to work. And it was, I saved it. It was the second to the last chapter I wrote. And I kept saving. I kept putting it off because I knew that I was going to have to go really deep into it. And what I discovered was that delay of processing that fully feeling the pain of that loss at the time, it isn't like it disappears. All it does is it creates another piece of baggage on the big cart you're hauling behind you through your life. And, you know, I could begin to see how that loss, at the same time earlier that year, my mom had been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. So the big shock was we're all hovering around keeping her alive, and my brother dies suddenly. And it was, you know, so a lot of complex, heavy-duty things going on, not unlike all families experience at one point or another. But what I could see was that not feeling those feelings, like we end up carting those with us into every relationship, into every job. We are either standing guard because now we're our all of our adrenaline is sky high because we're going to stay alert to make sure we don't get caught off guard again, or we shut ourselves down because feeling that pain it feels like we won't survive it. If we fully feel it, we're not going to make it through to the other side. And so that's what, once I began to tell that story, and I had gone and I had rented a house in Sonoma to finish the book, and I knew I had to write that very difficult chapter, and I just let it rip. I just started telling the story, and then I'd have to go for a walk or, you know, sit by the fire and just really take myself back to every moment of those couple weeks when I felt like my world was torn apart. And the truth is, of course I did survive it. Of course I did make it through. And of course I cried like I've never cried in my life, and I released, and every time I thought I was done, there was still more to release. But, you know, that's my message. My message is that, You know, you end up with your heart's even more open, your capacity for compassion is even greater, and that, you know, you will survive those unfelt griefs.
Yeah. I saw my dad take his last breath, and I can't get it out of my head still. And he died October 19th, and it you're about to cry again. You know, it's just painful. And he was such a part of all of our lives, and so many kids, and so many grandkids, and great grandkids, and baseball, and everything. And it's just brutal. I feel for people, and you know, I think what I've done, what I've noticed, I stopped myself 58 days ago, been on a sugar detox. So I stuck my head right back in that chocolate and pizza again. I mean, whoa, I am like a stress emotional type eater, I've learned.
Yeah.
And that whole experience, and not about me even, just that was like not a real reaction to anything. Just like something I was subconsciously doing or whatever. I don't even know. But 58 days ago now, I'm just like, okay, we're stopping this and we're going to let the grief happen. And I'm just so sad some days without my dad. It's a bummer. And it's my parents were married for over 40 years and there's all of us. And my mom is just sucking wind on certain days. I'm like, oh, I don't know how to do this. You go on this like uncharted territory. And it's painful. And I think I'm just coming to realize, like, it makes you kind of really go, well, is that statue sitting on my shelf really that important? Wow. I've just, you know, I've lost my dad. Is that, you know, material, I mean, like got all weird with material things suddenly.
Yeah.
Well, gradually a little bit. Do you have any, how about your advice on that, Siri?
You know, listen, it definitely is that, that walk through fire that only you can do for yourself. You know, 4 years later, my mom died. And I remember thinking, it's like I would keep playing the game of what's worse. Because I knew at the time my brother died, it was terrible for me. It was absolutely terrible for me. But my parents had lost a son. And my niece and nephews had lost a dad. And my sister-in-law had lost her life partner. And I'd be I'm sure it's worse for them. I'm sure it's worse for them. Like, but, you know, it almost like doesn't even matter. It's like everybody has to do their walk, and it's a solo thing, and to feel your feelings, to express your grief, to acknowledge your pain, and then the light comes in, and then the healing begins. Where I love these great words from Abraham Hicks, which is really my spiritual path. You know, you have to look for them where they are, not where they aren't. You know, so I think of my mom comes to me as a dragonfly, and and it's weird. It's like in a moment of decision, all of a sudden I'll get bombarded with dragonflies, and I know that's her way of just touching base, telling me I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And I was just at my dad's house, my mom and dad's house last weekend. And I was looking at the green plaid couch, and my mom always sat in this one section of it. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, oh, gosh, I miss you so much. And I thought, oh, see, I'm looking for you where you aren't anymore. Instead of, like, bring on the dragonflies, like all the different ways when I'm really centered that she shows up for me, that she answers questions for me, that she just touches me. In some energetic way to let me know that she's still very much present.
That's really wise advice. I love that. But, 'cause that's what I do too. I'm like, exactly. You're like looking for them where they aren't. That's a really good point. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
I will incorporate that into my world.
It really helped me. It really has helped me. 'Cause I stopped doing the thing that makes me sad. And instead I try to do the thing that makes me feel connected to her. And when I know, okay, here's what I know. This is a big mystery, and the veil is thin. The veil is thin between the non-physical and the physical. The veil is thin, and it's the great mystical, magical mystery of this experience. And, you know, I know that we live in a quantum reality, and it's becoming clearer all the time how mystical life is. So why not live like that? So, like, you know, that's true.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more. I wanted to ask you about, so I wanted to kind of take that, but lighten the conversation a little bit if we can.
Yes.
but I still want to go into no land because, I love it for if people listen to the show and it truly helped them. Like if you're sitting on your treadmill and you're listening to us, you know, right now or on replay, I'd like for you to listen to this and go, wow, just like she helped me, I'd like for this to help you. One of the things I see over and over and over again on Best Ever You are people feeling rejected. My manuscript has been rejected. I got a no for that job offer. I got a, you know, a little bit more no than yes. And I love to tell people, say yes, say yes, say yes, and say no to certain things. And, you know, I love to be positive. Can you talk about that? You know, like a good solid no can, I don't get bummed out by no's. No's are kind of cool in a way because, you know, I don't beat my head over the no. It's like, no, this stuff's going to happen. But sometimes people get stopped right in their tracks.
I've lost months of my life being disappointed, heartbroken, you know, steeped in depression over the no's that I've gotten in my life. And it's why I named the book The Beautiful No, because it's been kind of become a foundational spiritual principle. Is I was up for a big, huge job in advertising and didn't get it and thought I was getting it, and it seemed like I was getting it. And then at the 11th hour, I did not get the job, and I was broke. I really needed it. And shortly thereafter, I got the message on my answering machine from the Oprah Winfrey Show asking me to come in and freelance. And here's what I knew. A few years later, I was like, wow, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I'm so glad I didn't get that job at the advertising agency. And I said, wait a minute. Oh, my God, that was the beautiful no. That was the most beautiful no I'd ever gotten. And I just started to look at my life and say, any time that you didn't get what you thought you wanted, it led to other things and other meetings and other opportunities, or it spared me from pain and heartbreak and things that I truly did not want. And so I tend to, what I look at the concept of the beautiful no, the philosophy as I've laid it out, it's I don't want to lose any more days, weeks, or months to being disappointed, heartbroken, or depressed. When a no comes my way, I want to, in that moment, master it and say, hey, I can't see the benefit in you right now, but I trust and believe that I will. And so I press on and look forward to seeing how this is going to all unfold in my life.
Yeah, that's wise as well. See? We're helping people. I love it. Thank you. All right. What do you dream of? Okay, so now I'm on page 252. This is another page I turned to because you're like, you are what you dream, and you're talking about your mighty dream quest and all this stuff.
Yep.
So what do you dream of? You've done so many things. And by the way, sorry, advertising agency. Is that like a ha 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 ha? But we're not vindictive, are we?
No. I think they missed out. Their doors, but okay. listen, I'm living the life of my dreams now because it's fully inhabited. I feel like I'm fully living it. I'm focused. I listen to the story I tell myself. I make sure it's the story I want to tell. But, like, you know, the details of the dream still unfolding, I'm really looking forward to manifesting. Do you hear that? There's a
little
bell.
Oh, we love it.
Kiss,
but make them bark. Hello, babies.
In
so
real
adorable.
Life. Hi, girls. Hey,
Hi. Can
we stop that? Bella, why don't you come over here? I'm busy right now. I'm looking forward to manifesting my soulmate man. And I've moved to a new area of the country, a new part of the country, and it's like a small town, world class situation, and I you know, meeting all kinds of new people, so that feels really good. And I also think I would like to live abroad, like perhaps work from Tuscany for a year.
Epic.
So yeah. So I'm thinking there'll be something like that in the not too distant future. And meanwhile, I'm growing my own crops in the backyard. I have a big edible garden, and I'm embracing the freedom that I feel, the freedom that I've claimed as my own in my life.
I love it. Yeah, it's powerful. You know, I read something yesterday that said millennials don't want to work for you. They want to work for themselves.
Yes.
And I went, and I cringed, and I'm like, oh my goodness. So we're just going to skip the step of learning from your elders or people that you work with, you know, all that stuff. Do you think that you could just launch all of this stuff without the experiences you're having that you've had? Because I don't think I could. I don't think I could do Best Ever You without the life I've lived and the experiences
I've had. Well,
that's
true. And I couldn't. I couldn't have because of those generational and cultural things that we talked about. But what I'm seeing when I'm out in the world, which makes me so happy for young women and guys, that they have a way of self-support where masterminds and groups where they come together and share their learnings and provide support in a way that, you know, our parents didn't have and that we didn't have. Like, if I would have said I'm starting my own company when I graduated from Iowa, I'd have been like, you sit down, Missy. You're going to get a proper paycheck, you know, and actual benefits. You're not going to go off and start your own company. What kind of company? And so I'm kind of cheering for those young folks.
I am too. Yeah.
I think being the master of your fate is a really interesting idea, but I do think it's very important that you gather with fellow young entrepreneurs to support each other and to kind of mastermind your way through the pitfalls, right?
Yeah, and maybe a few older people with a little bit more mileage. Like I always tell my kids, you know, you guys are all cool and brilliant and all that stuff. You know, I'm not saying I'm smarter than you. I just have a little bit more mileage and experience. So maybe I've seen things a little bit more than you have at this point. So make sure you ask. Like if you see something, I'm not going to probably say no to it, but just ask because we might be able to add something to it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, but,
listen, I love the wisdom of the elders. My two grandmothers, like, were, you know, in physical life, they were guiding lights for me, and now in non-physical life, they're guiding lights for me. It's so strange. Every time I would be at something, you know, someone would say, we have, you know, a psychic or a soothsayer or something, and every single time it'd be like, your grandmas are here, and they keep saying, write the book. I dedicated the book to them.
Yeah. So that's what that was. I wondered who the dedication was. So
yeah.
for Annie and Julia, I didn't know who that was, and I was going to ask. Is that your favorite part of the book? What's your favorite part of this book?
I know.
Do you have one? It's
book.
Hard.
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I think my favorite story of all of them is the chapter I wrote about Kissy, my 13-year-old English bulldog. And I just like that story. I think it's a little gem. And she's just come into my life. Like, I think we're probably, you know, she's on her way out. And, you know, she's starting to have health challenges. And I can feel her starting to detach. And so that's going to be a very, very difficult loss for me. I'm going to have to really process it. I'm going to have to really feel my feelings around that. But her journey to me and our time together has been, you know, so instructive and so heart-opening it's just one of my favorite stories. And if for anybody who loves their animals, I think they'll like that story too.
Yeah, I am probably one of the biggest animal lovers on the planet. Go on, challenge me, peeps, because I love to rescue animals. Cats, dogs, hamsters, bunnies, whatever it is.
Wow.
But we have a, so you and I are going to go through this together because we have an elderly dog as well. And she's 12 and she was just diagnosed last week. And I'm teary, just, I don't know what I'm going to do, but you know, when their back legs don't work, I'm going to say the word wrong. It's like neuromyelopathy or something like that, but her back legs don't work very well and they're starting to shake and so forth. And, So we're got a doggy who doesn't feel so good, and she's 12. And then before the show, I almost posted my, not that you want to know all about my animals, but I almost posted my co-host, which is a feral cat I rescued. Her name is Mel. I didn't know if you like cats, so I'm like, I better not post that.
Oh, like cats. How sweet.
But so,
I'm an animal lover.
Oh my goodness. And those English, I hope you post more pictures because the dog, I love those kind of dogs. They're so
I know,
cute.
They're so adorable. They're so sweet.
Oh, dog mommy. I love it.
Yeah.
I love my doggies and kitties. Okay. One more question, then I'll let you go. Cause I know I'm keeping you and I'm rambling, but I love you and thank you.
And I love you back. And this has been so great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, your book, for anybody who just joined us, is Sherry Salata, and your book is The Beautiful No, and we have the amazing ability to talk to you, and we're just so grateful. But here's my question. What comes natural to you, and what do you have to work at? Is there anything where you just absolutely are, like, great at something and are terrible at something? Do you have those things in your life?
Gosh.
Does anything come to mind? Other than blow drying out your hair, because your hair is beautiful no matter what.
Yeah, blow drying my hair does not come naturally to me.
Me either. Hot rollers and Velcro. I learned Velcro rollers a couple weeks ago.
Okay,
thank you.
So technology does not come naturally to me. So I'm constantly, you know, and for many years as a producer, I'd have teams of technical people helping me. So it's shocking to me how not naturally it is. And yet I have to keep pushing myself through it or I'll just end up like a dinosaur. So that does not come naturally. What does come naturally?
Everything else?
You know,
I think that's
humor.
Your one flaw maybe?
No, I think humor comes naturally to me. I love to laugh. I love it when people are funny. That is such an attractive quality to me. And, you know, for a lot of years, work came naturally for me. You know, problem solving, troubleshooting, producing, dreaming things up, that came very naturally to me. So, which is why I leaned so heavily into it. And now what I realize is it's okay if you're not the best at something. You can still be your best at it, your best ever you. You know, it's okay. You don't have to be, don't just do the things that you think you can be the best at. Try the things that you know. You know, like I just took Italian for 8 months last year, and I was the worst person in the class. You know, I was the one fumbling through my notes, but I loved it so much because I'd given myself permission not to have to be the best person.
Yeah, that's that. Don't you think that when a lot of success comes with the focus on what you really need to work at? Like I'm the worst runner on the planet. I mean, biggest cat lover, biggest dog lover, worst runner. And yet our son's baseball coach is like, and guess what you're going to go do? You get to go run. Like, oh no. But you know, I can actually run 2 miles now and I'm stunned because I don't love to run. But when you kind of focus on and do little bits and pieces of what you're bad at, you might not ever be the best on the planet at it, but you have your own little, self-love and self-worth going on instead of that voice going, oh, I want to run, but I can't, or whatever.
Oh,
right?
Oh my gosh. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So we're all loving it. Okay. So I got to end the show, which you all know that I don't like to end the shows. I go on and on and on and on, but we're going to send you all to beautifulknow.com. And, there is a free chapter, right? You can get free stuff on your website.
Yeah, there's a free chapter that you can read. The free chapter 8 is up there. You can also, when you get the book and all the links to buy the book from all the different stores are on, at thebeautifulknow.com. You can also get the free 64-page workbook, which is kind of the companion workbook to reading The Beautiful Know. And we spent a lot of time on it, and I think it's really good.
Okay, I'm going to get mine too. I don't have that, so I'm getting mine. Is it The Beautiful Know or Beautiful Know, or do they both work?
It is thebeautifulknow.com.
Okay, good. I'll add that link in and make sure everybody has that. Sherry, I love you. Go Hawkeyes. Go The Beautiful Know. Go life. Go energy. Go peace. All those good, wonderful things.
Go best ever you. Go Elizabeth. Yeah. Thank you, my friend. I'm so glad we're friends.
Oh, I am too. I look forward to following you and knowing you and doing and just being part of your world. It's a joy, actually. Find joy. There's Sherry. So, all right, everybody. Thank you, Sherry, for being with us. You can follow her on Twitter too. She's amazing in various social media formats. And thank you all for listening. Okay, this is the part where I hate ending the show, so I'm just going to say it one more time. Go to thebeautifulknow.com. And thank you all for listening. What I also want to say is that when we bring our guests on, remember, we don't have sponsors or advertisers or anything like that. Everything Best Ever You and all of our millions of downloads are just because of you. You've heard it, you've shared it, you've told somebody about it, that kind of stuff. That's how we've made books sell and shows download and helped people. That's the message. So there's stuff in this show that will actually turn your life around or set it in a different direction or just whatever you're thinking of and dreaming of, all those things, reach out and ask somebody about it, because I am such a firm believer that if you don't get vocal with what you're thinking, no one ever knows it. So tell somebody, say, I'm thinking about writing a book. I'm thinking about moving. I'm thinking about taking Italian for 8 months. When you do that, people show up for you and help make your dreams come true. So this is us at Best Ever You. We love you. Go out and grab a copy of The Beautiful Know by Sherry Salata. It's Salata. Her website is thebeautifulknow.com. I love you all. Thank you for listening. And we're going to be back on August 11th with Winston Clements. So thank you all. Have a great day. Thank you, Sherry. Yay. Take care, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Elizabeth.
Thanks for listening to The Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.